I am so glad that you found. Actually, is that a spork?
No, it's actually just a spoon.
To eat your cheesecake. That's
chocolate
great.
Rim espresso cheesecake.
That's. I don't know what else to say about that.
Unnecessary.
Byron, what kind of cheesecake do you have? Oh. Byron doesn't. He has a plastic tumbler full of uniced water because he's a professional.
Never claimed to be professional anything but cryptozoologist.
It's Fright Day. This is episode 30. I'm your host, Byron, and tonight we dive into the oddly unsettling world of Joseph, reviewing Patrick Bryce's mumblegore stalker slasher Creep. And Kelly takes us on a verbal tour of the infamous Skinwalker Ranch in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I am joined tonight by Kelly.
Hi, everybody.
And Sam.
Did you say mumblegore?
Yeah, mumblegore.
God damn it, that's good.
It's pretty
It's really not that good. It's kind of obvious.
Some people say mumble horror, which I like as well, because it's like mumblecore.
Yeah, I like mumblegore.
Cool.
That's good.
Yeah,
doesn't work for Kelly. She says
it's
obvious.
Just stupid.
Byron and I try to elevate the show to a level where everyone's happy and positive, and you're just over there shitting all over the nice things that we make.
I'm not shitting. It's chocolate rum espresso cheesecake.
I think that's what they used in the Human Centipede 3.
Chocolate rum espresso cheesecake.
What did they use it for?
For poop.
Oh, poop. Right.
It's real good
because of the butts. We talked about Jurassic World in our last episode, or two episodes ago, didn't we?
Possibly briefly. Kelly stopped you because it's not horror, but I'll allow it.
Did I stop you? I don't recall that.
You said not horror.
It really whet my appetite for large creatures dismembering humans. And I'm in luck this week. I was so excited. It was announced Eli Roth is going to be directing the movie adaptation of Steve Alton's fantastic giant shark novel, Meg.
What's Meg?
It's a megalodon. It's a megalodon. It's the giant megalodon from Jurassic World.
It's a prehistoric, monstrous great white that can grow to be 50 feet long, have...
Okay. Someone's busted.
It's me, and Sam, it's your mom calling. It's not my fault.
Oh, wow. We have just hit a new level of professionalism here at Fright Day.
It's all right.
Sorry. It's gone now.
Sorry,
it's
Mom.
Gone. It's gone. I hope everything's okay.
Please continue about megalodons.
50 feet long and had teeth that were 7 inches in length. Serrated dagger, steak knife, murder machine, mouthful of death. Meg, the novel by Steve Alton, was a huge success. New York Times bestseller in 1997 when it came out. And it kind of scratches the Jurassic Park itch for people who like large creatures and, you know, things going terribly amok. And it was just announced that Eli Roth actually is appearing in this year's Shark Week, hosting Shark After Dark, which is evidently...
Really?
Yeah.
Does he know a lot about sharks?
I don't know. He must be somewhat interested in them because he's actually appearing on Shark Week and he's directing Meg. So, I don't know. I'm excited for this. It's going to be big studio production. Hopefully, it's just a bunch of mindless blood in the water.
I wonder if they're going to make it a direct tie to Jurassic World, do you think?
Why would they do that?
Because there's a megalodon in Jurassic World, and this is Universal, and it's the same company.
Wait, isn't Chris Pratt also in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh.
Yeah, and he's going to be the new Indiana Jones.
Let's cross them all, huh?
Get them all in there in Star Wars.
One world!
So it looks like viewers are going to be able to participate in Shark Week this year, starting July 5th.
Wee wee!
Eli Roth hosting it. Great choice. Great tie-in. I heard the announcement and it made me smile big.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of an odd choice.
He is. Normally, they have people who are, you know, science-y.
Yeah.
And Eli Roth is not.
I mean, they should have chosen... What are you laughing at?
He's an idiot.
Oh, hey, come on now. Let's be nice. I was going to say that maybe Tom Six would have been a better choice because everything he does is...
Bless you.
Oh, sorry, excuse
you.
Excuse me.
Medically accurate.
And based on
science. Exactly. Ass to ass. Fin to fin.
blow. Wait, no, that's dolphins. So I was going to say blowhole this to bottlenose. Blowhole to bottlenose.
Ever since I cut cable, I haven't been able to enjoy Shark Week, but what can I do?
Is there someone you can get it? There's got to be somebody who does it with a service that we can get.
Shark Stream?
Oh, the puns tonight. The puns.
I'm even going to leave that one in.
It was a mumbly pun is what it was.
It was bad.
It was great. It was great.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. It was good, Byron.
No, I have Byron a speech impediment.
You don't.
It's a bit of a stammer.
You did great.
I haven't seen Jurassic World yet.
If you liked the first ones.
Hated it.
Really?
I'd rather watch Newman and Seinfeld. I'm just kidding. Of course I like Jurassic Park.
Thank God.
Remember the toys?
No.
The Jurassic Park toys?
Yeah, they had little chunks of skin that would come out of the side of the T-Rex.
Do you remember the book?
They wrote a book about that?
About the toys, yeah.
Did you know that they wrote a book about the Passion of the Christ?
About the movie?
It's a Bible joke.
I got it.
Oh, I thought... Never mind. Yeah. Jurassic Park. Good show. Check it out. Real good. Kind of horror-ish. And if there's really a connection to Meg, then we can really
Jurassic World, and there's no connection.
I think there's going to be. I'm predicting
Jurassic World.
I'm predicting a connection.
We should get a real psychic on the show.
I know a couple real psychics.
Yet another reason that you do not want Kelly in your corner in the OTB.
What's the OTB?
Off-track betting.
Is it illegal for us to call Miss Cleo and put it on the show?
I don't care.
All right.
I do. I don't want to get sued by Miss Cleo.
I can do a pretty good Jamaican accent.
Is Miss Cleo still in the game? I don't know that she's even still in the game.
I don't think it was ever her. What do you mean? You think one person answered all those calls?
My point is her organization even still in the game? That was like 10 years ago, last time I saw Cleo.
Honestly, you have no idea.
People still use
phones. On USA, up all night.
I was on every channel.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the only one I ever saw it on. Probably the only thing I ever had on late at night, though.
I heard there's a lot of off-screen blood splashes in Jurassic World.
What do you mean off-screen blood splashes?
I guess off-screen deaths, whereas like poof, blood sprays against the wall, that kind of stuff.
You know what's funny is I didn't really notice that.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it wasn't there. I'm not a detail person when I'm watching movies.
I will say there's one spectacular blood splatter that makes full use of the 3D, so... You might want to consider seeing it in 3D.
Oh, I would.
Okay. Moving right along.
Okay. What'd you watch?
I'm caught up on Wayward Pines. And because I'm enjoying that so much, I decided I was going to rewatch The Village, which is one of my favorites. I know Sam and I disagree about this.
We disagree 2/3.
Right. But my favorite is the M Night at the end.
You get an M Night.
Yeah, I love getting an M Night.
Whenever M Night knights it.
I love getting knighted. The knightings are my favorites. And that's why I really like Wayward, because there was a knighting mid-season. I don't know what's going to happen now, because there was a full-blown knighting in episode 5.
There were a lot of knights. Pretty much every episode.
Yeah, but episode 5 was like a knight.
We can't be the only ones that use it as a verb for shitty nonsense twists.
It's not shitty nonsense twists. I love twists. Whatever. Anyhow,
are you writing your review?
Yes.
Okay. And the M. Night twist, the knighting of this episode, you fully embraced it from the second it started.
Loved.
You didn't go.
Not for a second.
Come on.
Swear to God, I was like.
Her eyes were glazed over in awe.
It was so exciting.
It's the worst image. I just saw it.
Yeah.
Okay. So because I enjoyed it so much, I watched The Village and it totally stands up. I haven't seen it in probably 10 years. Love it. And also Jurassic World tie-in, Bryce Dallas Howard. She really is a good actress. She had some good chops in that one and she was very entertaining in Jurassic World.
Huh.
Yeah. So those were my big, it was a nighty week for me.
I'm still about halfway through The Village.
You haven't ever finished The Village?
No, I was sleeping to it a couple
weeks. Do you know the night?
Stop where you are.
Of course I do.
You know what the night is. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that kind of ruins it.
Does it though?
Well, I mean, no, because I guess the times I've watched it after seeing it the first time, I've still enjoyed. I just really like being knighted.
Sam, please.
I don't even know where to go with that.
What have you been watching?
I read Meg.
That's it?
Yeah.
How's the book?
It's massively entertaining, not Pulitzer material, but it's just fun. It's a great summer read. And I think especially in preparation for the movie coming out, it's certainly worthwhile. This is an odd story of how I heard of Steve Alton. We were listening to Coast to Coast Radio one night, and he's a recurring guest speaking about his books and about prehistoric, possibly surviving aquatic monsters generally.
So he's very interested in water lore.
Yeah, but
maybe
but
he'll
actual
go on
scientific,
an expedition with me.
No.
I think.
And his newest book, actually, I picked up today as well because I'm kind of on a kick. It's called Vostok, and it's about expedition to the extremely pure lake underneath the Antarctic ice cap that the Russians are drilling down to and what may lurk beneath. So I'm excited to start that, too.
Maybe a spaceship, like in Thing?
Or in X-Files. It seems pretty much like there's going to be a spaceship down there.
So apparently Steve reads and answers all emails and uses the names and descriptions of his loyal fans as characters in his books. So Sam, you better get on it.
That's what they actually did for the first couple seasons of the X-Files.
Really?
On the message boards, it was like the first instance of digital communication,
like
between
social interaction. Wow.
Between the creators and the writers. A lot of the storylines for the first episodes were taken from ideas given by authors in the message board.
Wow.
And then it got too fucking crazy and they're like, we can't keep this up.
Yeah, and we can't keep it up because there are too many of you and you're all fucking weirdos.
Yeah, imagine that situation these days. Fan would instantly sue the show.
You think?
Of course.
Yeah, people are pretty horrible.
Really?
People are very bad people these days.
Yeah.
Well, they're litigious. I mean, let's qualify that.
Our listeners aren't. Pretty much everyone else is.
I deserve cash.
Well,
now.
I don't know.
When you put it like that, I guess
if I suggested
I do too.
An idea for an episode and they used it, I'd just be so damn excited.
Exactly.
So, Sam, you need to get on it. Start writing Steve. Also, assignment from Captain Kelly. I need you to read The Lock. It's one of the books he's written, and it is obviously about Loch Ness. So could you get on that? Maybe read that for next week?
You're going to make Sam read it?
I'm delegating.
I thought you were talking about the audience.
You realize that your,
no, I'm delegating.
Your rank is both
Captain.
Honorary and self-applied.
No, Captain.
That's enough. Meg has had a long journey to production. Haven't they been talking about making this movie for a very long time?
Yeah, evidently Disney was on board to produce in the late 90s, right after it came out and was so successful. And that fell through for whatever reason those things fall through for.
Because it needs to be a monster movie.
Yeah, things need to die. And this isn't giving anything away. It's in the first couple of pages. It eats T-Rex.
Okay.
So read the book.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
How big's a T-Rex?
I don't know. Food size for a megalodon?
All right.
Big.
I didn't watch anything this week, guys. That's why I was leaning so hard on you.
Oh my God, nothing?
Well, I did watch two things, but they are the same thing. It was the first and second episode of the third season of Hannibal.
Oh, okay. Well, that counts, Byron.
How are you feeling about the news about Hannibal?
Well, first of all, maybe I should explain how I'm feeling about the first couple episodes of the season.
Oh, sure. If you want to do it in order.
Yeah, I guess. I got notes over here.
Let's see the notes.
Ooh. Oh, they're made of words.
Yeah. I scribbled them.
So proud of you.
Thanks, man. I'm just not 100% sold on this new season. The show's beauty has always been a huge part of it. The cinematography and how everything looks. Now that they're in Europe and they're even fancier, it's a bit too much for me to take at points. Feels too smart.
Oh, smart is irritating.
I wasn't a huge fan of the Hannibal movies in between Silence of the Lambs and I guess all of them other than Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. What did you think of Manhunter?
I never saw Manhunter. I guess I should. I don't know. Maybe I don't like Hannibal. I just like it when he's killing people, I guess.
Then he'll always be Sir Anthony Hopkins to me.
If you didn't know, NBC this week announced it is canceling Hannibal.
I'm sorry, Byron.
No, I'm fine.
I'm sorry,
I'm totally okay.
Byron.
I think the first season was great. Second season was a little worse. This season is fine. I've got my Gillian Anderson coming up in X-Files and The Fall anyway. So
when do those episodes air?
I think they're filming this summer. They'll probably air sometime next year. But have you seen The Fall?
No, but I've heard it's really
good. It's so much better. It's my favorite Gillian right now.
Whoa.
Apparently there is an online petition going around to save Hannibal. And right now it's got 60,000 people who have signed.
Is it worth the effort, Byron?
If they like it, that's fine. Any horror on TV is good for me. But if it doesn't get picked up, it looks like Netflix or Amazon might save the day. Yep, they tend to do that.
They really are the new game changers.
Superheroes of cinema.
Yeah.
we'll see where this season goes. It's only 10 episodes.
You'll get resolution pretty quickly. Yeah. And then you can go back to your life of real serial killers.
I promise to do better next week.
I could certainly watch a bit more myself. I really want to watch Children of the Corn. That's kind of on my list right now because I've never seen it.
Have you never seen it?
No, never.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Good. It's really good.
Yeah, so that's on my list.
Your classic review on Frightday.com.
It's kind of, in my opinion, Stephen King at his peak.
Absolutely.
Although, remember when we were talking to Stuart Gordon, he...
Wait, what about Maximum Overdrive?
Well, same era.
Okay. He's on just as much cocaine during Children of the Corn, you think?
I don't think so, because it was a functional movie.
That's pretty true. What were you saying about Stuart Gordon?
When we asked him about a book that he would like to make into a movie that wasn't Lovecraft, and he said, Mr. Mercedes, one of Stephen King's newer works.
Have you picked that up?
Surprising to me. I haven't yet.
Lots of cars. We got Nosferatu by his son. And he writes a book called Mr. Mercedes.
And Christine.
Oh, of course, Christine. Who could forget?
And Cujo.
And that's nothing to do with a car. That's a dog.
Did he do?
Yeah, they get locked in the car.
Herbie the Love Bug?
I think this really not the original, but he did the sequel.
I loved those movies when I was younger. And That Darn Cat, that was another really good one.
You were talking about the Lindsay Lohan remake?
No.
Clearly.
Lindsay Lohan wasn't in the remake of That Darn Cat. It was actually Ricci, I believe.
What are we talking about?
I'm not sure how we got here.
Especially since we could be talking about Skinwalker Ranch in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Welcome, everybody. Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, installment number 30.
Come on.
Yeah, this is great. I'm so excited to share this with you guys tonight. This is one of my all-time favorite conspiracy stories because it integrates so many different elements of the cryptid and conspiracies universe. Oh, where to begin? Skinwalker Ranch is a ranch in northeastern Utah. It's about 480 acres and it borders two Indian reservations. I'm going to butcher the names, but I'm going to try Uinta and Auray.
All right. Come on.
Maybe we'll just stick with Indian reservations.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So it was a functional ranch for a long time. Records in the 30s indicate that it did well at that point, and then it sat empty for a long period of time. In 1994, a family looking for a dream ranch purchased this land, and immediately very, very strange things began happening. They had a prize breeding herd of cattle. And suddenly out in the pastures where they kept the cattle, 30-foot triangles and circles that were impressions in the pastures themselves started appearing. Lots of people will say crop circles, but this was somewhat different. A lot of times the dirt was actually dug up in these shapes, which is a little bit unique. I'm not a huge source of knowledge on crop circles, but the research I have done, almost always it's pressed down crops of some sort. The fact that there was actually dirt dug up is an added dimension to these interesting formations in their pastures.
Well, it seems from the standpoint of a person who thinks and has considered in the past, hey, it'd be really funny to go fake some crop circles. It would be a lot more difficult and demanding to go dig up mounds.
Yeah. Probably even harder to pick up the beer cans from the afterward. Crew.
Yeah. Wait until you hear some of the other things that were happening to this family. Oh, this is so interesting. All right.
You're thrilled.
This is honestly one of my favorites. Okay, so this family, the Shermans, they had really, really high-level prize breeding, 80 head of cattle. Anybody who's familiar with ranching in any form knows that a rancher's livelihood depends on those 80 heads. Over a narrow period of time in 1994 and 1995, they lost 14 head of cattle. And losing 14 of 80 breeding cattle is completely...
Was it the mob?
It was not the mob. So, sorry.
The cattle saw too much.
I was just thinking, like, they're always throwing those heads in the beds with people who are sleeping as a warning.
No, those are horses. Horses.
That's almost...
It was a horse head, Byron. Sorry. God!
Almost 20% of their livelihood. I can't believe
you just effed up. You just disrespected the Godfather.
That's okay. It's not that good.
Byron! Diving back right in. As these cattle began disappearing, the first couple that died, they were obviously upset about, but didn't think anything strange of it. But as those numbers started to stack up, it was pretty unusual to lose that many. And he started, started investigating bodies of these cattle. And the first one that was found dead, the only sign of any harm was a single hole drilled straight through one of its eyeballs.
and there was this really weird chemical smell. It had been out in the pasture overnight. No predators had even touched it. You know,
it's because he's icky.
Well, yeah, but that's weird. That's really, really weird that the predators would sense something weird about it and want to stay away.
So this Terry Sherman guy real quick.
Yeah.
What's his level of reliability? I'm looking at a picture of him here and he looks like a regular Larry the Cable Guy.
Salt of the earth.
Well, so he's definitely a rancher, but he has multiple bachelor's degrees in animal husbandry and was a very well-respected rancher. He wasn't just a complete idiot. To be able to have a high-level herd of cattle and keep your livelihood going off of that, you have to be pretty good at what you do.
Good.
So he's not an idiot. He's a trustworthy dude. The second cow that died, he investigated and found this exact same hole. And so this time he decided to actually poke a wire in the hole to try and see how deep it went. And it went all the way into the center of the cow's brain, or roughly the length of where that would be. So that was pretty strange.
Poking cow brains with wires.
I gotta tell you, the brain is pretty soft. I've touched a brain.
Right. But like literally
a cow brain
to poke iron, a wire in and meet no resistance. Like even if you're poking into something soft, you can still feel that you're poking something. But to feel whatever that hollowed out hole goes that far back, just weird.
So it's probably a biopsy then.
Could be.
Is that the guess here?
Could be. I wouldn't speculate. But I think it's pretty clear that it wasn't, you know.
Don't you always speculate?
Well, no. I try to be scientific. Respect me.
I respect you.
Respect my authority.
That's ridiculous.
Sorry. I apologize.
Thanks.
Cows continued to disappear. And one evening, there were three or four cows that had disappeared. It was the winter, and the family actually followed the tracks in the snow. The cows had wandered out, and the tracks ended underneath a tree, completely disappeared. And around those last tracks were like sticks and branches from the tree above, as though something above them had broken those trees' branches off. Kind of interesting, kind of weird. They'd never found those cows. So some of the cattle they found dead, others just completely disappeared, never found again. Obviously, they're starting to worry what's going on, not only for their own safety, but also for their own livelihood, because when you lose that high a percentage of your herd, things are looking pretty grim.
So they lost 50% in...
No. 14. 14 cows out of 80, which is, I mean...
17.5%.
That's huge.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's huge. Huge.
That's tough to come back from if you don't have insurance, especially.
Right.
Cattle insurance.
You can get cattle insurance.
I bet you can.
Concurrent with these cow happenings, Terry saw a giant glowing object fly over a tall group of poplar trees that he estimated were at least 50 feet high. So it was clearing the poplar trees. His wife saw another lit object a few days later, and they also saw, and this is a quote from them, 100-foot circular openings appearing in the air. It was like four orange-colored doorways would sort of spiral open. Using a high-power scope, they watched as smaller craft would emerge from these portals, fly around on the property, and then re-enter the portals, and the portal would close. So I realized that I've just jumped into something that's a little bit crazier sounding.
Yeah, for sure.
This is the interesting thing about the Skinwalker Ranch, though. The portal element, I mean, obviously UFO sightings, cattle mutilations, crop circles, those things happen in lots of locations. These portals, which have been reported by lots and lots of people on this property, are a completely unique thing. They occur in very, very few areas, and they're very rarely reported by numerous people in one area. It appears that there is something to these because of the number of people who have seen them. There are stories of these portals opening and creatures crawling out of them. I actually remember hearing one of those stories when I was a little kid, and it was one of the scariest things I'd ever heard listening to Coast, was the idea of this portal opening on the land and some skinny little being literally crawling out of it and then like running away. That scared me more than anything imaginable.
The idea that someone was on that many drugs at that moment. Though,
okay,
come on
clearly
now.
The Shermans are not drugies.
Well, I'm not saying they are, but I'm saying that someone saw a tall, skinny man crawl out of a portal. It's quite possible that maybe they were having the...
Well, the Shermans saw these craft come out of the portals.
Sure.
Okay.
Men.
And Sam, I was hoping that they would mention what kind of a power spotting... Oh, wait, no, they do. Through a 60 power spotting scope. What's a 60 power spotting scope, Sam?
Oh, wait, this seems like a good time for...
Sam's Weapons Authenticity Report.
I love it.
Spotting, it's a telescope.
Let him play the jam.
It played already. Okay. I just love his frustration.
It's a telescope that magnifies things 60 times their normal size.
But a spotting scope is specifically used with weapons, right?
No, it's people use them for bird watching.
Okay, but they're used with weapons.
And this has been
Sam's Weapons Authenticity Report.
That's great.
Thanks, Byron.
I apologize. I thought that would be a good way to bring you into this, Sam.
Well, now he's in it.
All right.
Yep.
He's over there fact-checking.
Knee deep.
So like I
he's
said...
He's over there on reportal.com, a website that Sam and I have started to report
just
portals.
Now.
I think we should, because honestly, portals are the craziest, creepiest thing.
Oh, Byron, we got a portal coming in.
Oh.
Okay.
So look at that.
Stop it.
Sorry.
So as I said at the beginning of this report... One of the most fascinating things about the Skinwalker Ranch is that it is a collection of a lot of different categories of paranormal activity. Along those lines, it's interesting to mention that while they were experiencing cattle mutilations, very strange crop circle-like formations, possible portal openings, which I know you guys think is crazy, no, but really multiple dimensions and...
That's how you got to do it.
Theoretical physics indicates that that actually could be a possibility.
Well, it's not practical that people would be traveling in a ship over the distances
clearly
that would be required.
Obviously. Yes. Great. I'm glad you agree. It's wonderful. Wow. That was really nice. Huh. One of the other things that comes into this giant collection of paranormal is one day Terry Sherman and his son were out in the pasture and literally heard voices speaking. It almost sounded like they were coming out of thin air, like the air above them is the way they described it. They're speaking a language that they couldn't understand. Terry understands some of the Native American dialects from the areas around him. And he said it sounded almost like a mix of that and maybe Russian or some other Eastern language.
So do you think this could have been a legitimate skinwalker?
Well, I don't know, because skinwalkers, I think, take a physical form. But this was almost like, I guess it would kind of fit in with the dimensional thing where maybe there was noise coming through. I don't know, but it was really interesting. Here's the creepy part.
Sorry, I was just going to explain what a skinwalker was to everyone.
Okay, you can in a minute, because I'm getting to something else that ties to skinwalkers more closely. Fine. Okay.
So, Byron, shut up.
Sorry. Yeah, just hold up a second.
Okay.
Okay. While they're listening to that, the son says something, almost speaking directly to them. The voices stop. One of the voices laughs. And then they resume talking again. So that's kind of weird. Uh-huh. Another really, really weird thing. This is probably one of the craziest experiences that the Shermans reported. And this also brings in a little bit more of the traditional skinwalker legend, which is part of Native American folklore. And I think Byron's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. In some Native American legends, a skinwalker is just a person that could be wearing the skin of an animal to be blending in with nature. But according to Navajo legend, a skinwalker is a medicine man who gets that highest level of priesthood and can transform physically into other animals. In order to do that, Sam, didn't you say you have to kill an enemy and like snort its bones or something?
Did I say that?
Yeah, I think you said that.
It's possible that I'd been snorting bones.
Okay. What?
No, there's something about like you have to kill one of your own to become that highest level of priesthood. I can't recall exactly.
It makes sense. You got to kill one of your own for anything good to happen.
Well, I do know it's tied to cannibalism in some cultures, so that would make sense.
So snort the bones and you can become any animal you want.
Interesting.
It's just a fact.
Where's the cat?
Good to know.
That's all I know about skinwalkers.
That's wonderful. Okay. So kind of tied to that, the Shermans one night spotted an extremely large wolf out in their pasture. And this was particularly weird because wolves aren't really prevalent in the area of Utah that they live. Mm-hmm. Kind of made its way across the field and approached them almost like a pet would approach them. It had just rained and they said that the wolf almost smelled like a wet dog and they started petting it. I think that's a little weird. If I saw a wolf coming, I would not be petting it.
Sounds like it was probably a dog.
Could be. But here's where it gets interesting. After a little bit of time, it walked over to the corral and grabbed a calf by its snout and was trying to pull it through the corral bars.
And they just let this happen?
Well, no. So Terry and his son start beating on the wolf's back, trying to get it to stop. It won't stop. So Terry runs and grabs his 357 Magnum. Sam,
perfect time for...
Sam's Weapons Authenticity Report.
Would a 357 Magnum be able to stop a wolf?
Yes, Kelly, it would.
And is that because it's a gun?
Yeah, because it's a gun and the wolf is made of meat.
All right.
All right, but I'm just wondering.
Sam's Weapons Authenticity Report.
Terry grabs his 357 Magnum, and just for the record, he is an experienced shooter.
Well, he runs a ranch. Of course he is. That's right. You got to defend your property.
And he's also a big game hunter. And so he gets the wolf at point blank range, shoots it.
Blows his fucking head off.
No effect. Absolutely no effect.
Whoa.
Fires again into the wolf, which finally lets go of the calf, but stands and looks at them like, what are you doing? Shot it two more times. The animal backed off a bit, but still there was no blood, no injury. More like the animal was just annoyed.
Did it sneeze bones at any point?
No. Byron, stop it.
Sorry.
He should have shot it one or two more times.
So Mr. Sherman was obviously pretty freaked out. So he grabs his hunting rifle, shoots it again.
Jeez. Excellent.
At close range.
What kind of hunting rifle?
At this point, Sam, you can verify this, but the wolf should be dead at this point.
Typically, if you shoot things a lot, then they die.
So if you've put four 357 rounds and one hunting rifle round into this wolf / dog, it should be clearly dead.
I would think that the dog wolf at that point would be having a bad day.
Apparently, with this fifth shot, a little bit of hair and flesh dropped off the wolf, but still it was completely fine, and it kind of sauntered across the field and wandered into a muddy area. The son and Sherman tracked it for a while, about a mile. And then just like the cow tracks, suddenly these wolf tracks completely disappeared.
So you're thinking portal?
Portaled.
Yeah, I am thinking portal. I mean, it's just weird, right?
It is weird.
It would have been cool if the bullets were like laying where the tracks ended.
That's true, in a big pile. But I bet they went all the way.
That actually would have been really cool.
I bet they went all the way through.
Yeah, through and through.
That's probably true. Obviously, I can't believe you guys didn't ask this question, but when he gets back to the corral, he looks at the chunk of wolf flesh.
Ooh.
So he says it looks and smells like rotten meat.
For fuck's sake.
And he asked around neighbors and whatnot. Nobody had ever seen a wolf in this area, let alone any oversized wolf, which this certainly was.
Was it a dire wolf?
Could be.
What's a dire wolf?
Don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. Dire wolf is a prehistoric predecessor to...
Okay.
A week later, the wife saw a similar size wolf. And here, just to give you an idea of size, she said that it was standing by her car and the back was parallel to the top of her window.
It sounds like a dire wolf, for real.
Could be a dire wolf. This could be a time portal. Who the hell knows? And apparently there was another smaller canine with the wolf at this point.
Like a dire coyote.
Right, right. So this was one of the weird... This was
a dire jackal.
You guys.
Hey.
This is a very serious report.
Okay.
This was one of the weird animals
Should
that was encountered.
Should we ask Charlie?
Stop it.
Okay.
Those actually ended up being some of the most normal animals that they saw. There were two reports, one by Terry's wife and one also by the wife of a sheriff in the area of a, okay, I'm going to quote here, heavily muscular animal weighing perhaps 200 pounds with curly red hair and a bushy tail. They said it almost looked like a large muscular hyena, but it was trying to kill one of their horses. And then, like I said, the sheriff's wife saw it a couple weeks later running across a field. So many weird animals showing up in this area, and not just cryptid-like animals, also crazy, rare, exotic birds that would never be living in Utah.
Toucans.
Would suddenly appear on the ranch and then disappear. And speaking of disappearing, that red, bushy, hyena-like thing, mm-hmm. when Terry got close to it with his rifle about 40 feet away, he says, literally the thing completely disappeared right in front of him. So I really think there's something interdimensional going on here.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also,
go ahead.
What kind of proof do you need to have to get this cow insurance money? This could just be a big scam where they're eating all these fucking cows. I saw the guy.
No, well, it's
you
got
to show him the wire that you use to probe
it's
the brain.
Not.
He's got a diet heavy.
Okay, but here's the thing.
In red meat.
Insurance is never going to cover, because if you've got breeding cows, what they're worth in terms of many years to come is far more than any insurance policy is going to cover.
I guess that's true.
They aren't just like run-of-the-mill, eat yum-yum cows.
So, Kelly, okay. I don't want to cut you off.
I know. Let me just...
We've talked for a very long time.
I'm sorry. So there is a whole part two to this story.
Absolutely.
Which we will get into at the next installment of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. What I will tell you is this. This is part one of the Skinwalker Ranch. Part two will tie in a character who inspired the billionaire character in Contact, who funded the whole space expedition.
Uh-huh.
The next installment of Skinwalker Ranch and the next phase that they went through following the ownership by the Shermans is directly tied to that individual. And it, if you can believe it, it gets even weirder and crazier than what we've talked about already.
So tune in next week.
Yes, indeed. And in the meantime, if any of you have cool stories about Skinwalker Ranch, because I know some people try to actually get close to it, almost like an Area 51 type of deal, I would love to hear anything, even, you know, third hand stories that you might have. So please, any Skinwalker info, shoot it my way.
Kelly@frightday.com.
Yeah. And one more quick thing. Sorry. Sure. In 2 weeks, I'm hoping to do a full ghost story episode with just stories from our listeners about their encounters with ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of you have those, I have 2 stories already. If any of you have those, I would really love you to submit those so that we can put those on that episode. And you can say when you submit it, whether you would like your name to be mentioned or whether you would prefer that it remain anonymous. We're happy to do either.
Spooky.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. And I will be telling one of my own ghost stories experiences in that same show. Next 2 weeks of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, maybe the best ever. So
let's talk about Patrick Bryce's Creep.
You're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Creep is a 2014 mumblegore found footage stalker slasher film directed by Patrick Bryce, starring Mark Duplass and Patrick himself. Sam, will you tell us, what Creep is all about?
Looking for work, Aaron, Patrick Bryce, comes across a cryptic online ad. $1,000 for the day. Filming service. Discretion is appreciated. Low on cash and full of naivety, he decides to go for it. He drives to a cabin in a remote mountain town where he meets Joseph, his cinematic subject for the day. I think giving any more, there's more to the description than that, but I think it wouldn't be fair to read the whole thing because it gives too much stuff away.
I completely appreciate your discretion because when I saw this the first time, I knew nothing going in and I very, very much enjoyed myself.
Thank you for allowing us to have that same experience because that's what we did too.
Well, yeah, you guys had the opportunity to watch the trailers. But you opted out?
Nope. I didn't want to know anything about it. I wanted to go in cold.
And you as well, Sam?
Yeah, you'd recommended that the twists were worth going into with an open mind.
For a found footage film in a genre filled with the repetition of these stories, this is something completely new. And its unsettling weirdness really does keep you guessing the whole time. Mark Duplass plays Joseph, who is absolutely the fucking weirdest character I've seen in years. The director, Patrick, plays Aaron.
And these aren't the two main characters. These are the two characters.
And that's all you see. There's a couple phone calls, but that's it. I can't imagine how much money went into this.
Can't have been much.
It's a Blumhouse, so this is the kind of stuff they love. This is why Paranormal made so much money.
Right.
These minimal casts and these simple concepts.
Low overhead, big rake in.
One camera, two people.
Yeah.
Hopefully lots of money because this came out on iTunes exclusively this week and it's going to be on Netflix July 15th.
Do we know how it's doing?
I hope it's going really well. It's had kind of a long road, but I'll get into that later. What are your thoughts, Kelly, overall?
I went into this movie, as I said, with a pretty open mind and literally had no idea what it was about other than that you said it was mumblecore-y and it had Mark Duplass, which that's kind of redundant. But I guess I could have done more investigation. I'm a big fan of not spoiling things. I'm big into surprises. And when you said that there was something to be gained by not coming in with background info, I really took you at your word there. I'm really glad I did. It was a really cool movie. And it was this uncomfortable feeling through the whole darn thing, wondering what's going to happen, knowing that something is weird, but not knowing exactly what direction it's going to go. And you could tell that a lot of it was improv or at least very organic conversation, which I think made for a really interesting story to follow. The movie stayed great about keeping one camera, which so much found footage-ish genre does a poor job of staying true to that, which it seems like it's just logical, right? Okay, if you're trying to shoot from one camera.
Shoot from one camera.
Shoot from one camera.
Yeah.
Right? And I think they literally did that. And because of that, there weren't any distractions.
Well, and they give us a legitimate reason for the camera to be on the entire time.
Exactly.
So Joseph's character, you find out, has a brain tumor. And he got the idea from that Michael Keaton movie, My Life, to record all the moments that his unborn son might miss while growing up. I assume it's a son. He called it Buddy, but yeah. That's a great excuse to have the camera on the entire time, you know?
I have to say that there were points where I questioned it after he was not in the scene and it was Aaron with the camera. There were points where I was like, why is he filming?
Joseph paid Aaron to film this entire day. I mean, he wasn't supposed to edit it. He wanted the unfiltered day in the life of so his kid could see what he really was like, his unborn
kid. And his kid was going to see some pretty interesting stuff.
Not necessarily legacy things that I'd want my child to experience.
Yeah. The whole naked in a tub thing.
Oh, tubby time.
It's just weird. Like, okay, the idea of filming, I kind of like, it's kind of cute. Like, okay, you're filming a bath, you know, that you would have done with your kid. But A, not naked. Freaking weird.
Maybe in a suit for tubby time. But
Yeah.
It kind of just bounces back and forth between, oh, is this just awkward cuteness or is it just outright total creep?
He does the most mundane things in the most unsettling way, and it's great.
It really is.
He's doing tubby time and he's pretending he's holding his baby, which is really interesting because by the time that kid watched that video and was able to take in what was going on, he'd be holding like a baby, like a full-grown child version of himself.
Maybe it was so for weird. The best that dad had brain cancer.
Oh man,
I never felt like, to go back to the one camera aspect, I'm so tired of found footage movies. I never felt like this was found footage. I mean, I was so immersed in it, it wasn't hammering me in the face.
It's not the modern sense of found footage.
Yeah, it's real, actual found footage.
Peach Fuzz. Originally, the title of this movie.
Yes.
You're a big fan of what this is.
I am. Do you think this is a spoiler? Does it require a dead giveaways notice?
Oh, I don't think so. Unless you want to jump in right now.
Well, I don't know that we want to do that. I just, do you think that this Peach Fuzz discussion...
It's time for dead giveaways. This is the point in the show where we spoil a movie. If you don't want this movie ruined, I highly recommend you pause and watch Creep on iTunes now, or you could wait till July 15th to watch it on Netflix before continuing. Peach Fuzz, Sam.
Peach Fuzz the werewolf.
This is not a werewolf movie. Don't confuse the folks. Joseph has a mask.
And it's a terrifying mask.
It really is. I saw on Patrick Bryce's Twitter that they made a bootleg shirt when it was called Peach Fuzz. They have a Peach Fuzz mask on it. Amazing shirt. Really, I very much want it. But is this some sort of wall for... Oh, we got so much to spoil.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
Where do we begin?
How about we begin with how Aaron ends up overstaying his welcome after hearing Joseph overshare. Not that he wanted to.
Right.
There's a scene that goes full black where Aaron shuts off the cameras,
the video,
but he still's recording audio.
And Joseph thinks he is not recording anything at all.
Absolutely. And we hear the story of, and now looking back at this, I'm not even sure if this really happened. Honestly, that's bizarre. He tells the story about how he got a report or something that his computer or his internet was being used for bestiality pornography, and that he knew he wasn't looking at it, but his wife, the only other person it could be, most likely was.
He and his wife went like on a weekend getaway, and he pretended that he had to go back to town for work, left, put on the Peach Fuzz mask, waited until his wife went to bed, crawled in the window, tied her up, essentially raped her, although the way he told the story sounded like she totally loved it, and then ducked out the window again, came back the next day. His wife apparently had no idea it was him because he asked how her night was the previous night, and she just said, oh, it was fine. And they never again spoke of it.
And he goes,
I
raped my wife.
But then we find out he didn't rape his wife.
I mean, we don't know.
He raped his sister.
Is that what they say? I missed that part.
How did you miss that?
Where okay. was that?
That she was
his... Angela was his sister, not his wife.
Oh, yeah, but I didn't know that. I thought that that could have meant that he was just saying names.
No, I guarantee you that was...
I don't think he did any of it. That's the thing about this character is it's impossible to know when he's telling the truth or when he's not.
An absolute pathological liar.
Absolutely. This is a modern Henry portrait of
right,
a serial
but
killer.
This is
a character study of a true psychopath.
But part of his whole MO is releasing these nuggets of truth to kind of lure in his victims. And I think I would put money. I really hope we get to talk to somebody from this movie
because I would
put money on the fact that that story was all 100% true, with the exception Angela's his sister, not his wife.
I didn't take the fact that he said that name to mean anything other than it's just him coming up with things on the spot.
Well, no, because the girl that calls on the phone is Angela and that's his sister.
I know, but I'm just saying that doesn't mean he raped his sister.
Just, yeah, I don't even think
there was ever a rape.
Agreed. The whole scenario is fabricated.
But it could have been.
I disagree. I think it was real, but that's okay.
Byron's right. That's why this movie is fantastic.
Also, the origin of where the mask came from, he said it was passed down in his family and his dad used to put it on and sing this song. And the song is obviously made up on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
So that is true or not? Where do you get the mask? And there's, I don't want to dive so deep into spoilers this early in the conversation. So we'll save some of that for later. Things go really wrong at such a pace. It's almost like cooking a lobster and slowly turning up the temperature, but knowing as a lobster that you're dying the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, because we go into this being uncomfortable and that floats the whole time, but it becomes real. It develops in a way that as a viewer, I didn't expect it to be so obviously he's a bad guy because there's too many signs that he is.
Right.
They don't usually show you that kind of stuff from the beginning.
I mean, even from Aaron's perspective, though, I could see why he wanted to keep believing that this was, I completely would have fallen for it.
Because of the emotion that...
Yeah. I mean, that last video that he sends with this desperate plea that he's a really troubled individual and he has nobody to talk to and he really needs a friend. I mean, I would have been like, okay,
maybe we shouldn't go that far. There is definitely a point where the movie flips a bit. And I don't think that it gives our listeners more of a reason to watch this movie by discussing it beyond that point.
Yeah, I think if we stop at the point where he escapes from the house.
Things escalate. Patrick and Aaron. No, Patrick is Aaron.
Yes. Joseph.
Joseph and
Aaron.
Aaron start drinking. Aaron wants to leave. He's asked several times to go. He's asked for his car keys.
It's obvious that Joseph's taken the car keys.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's weird that he didn't
stay,
ever.
Stay, buddy.
It's weird that he has this way of flipping the situation into him being such a lonely person.
Very manipulative.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Mark Duplass's performance in this movie, insane.
Yeah, it was really
good.
I've
never seen anything like this. And it's nothing like he's done before.
He's so natural. I mean, he is not acting. He has got to be a sick individual.
He is not.
No,
he's
So I was reading in a little bit about this movie, and Mark and Patrick are the writers of this movie, and they kind of workshopped these characters throughout, and while filming, they didn't really have a set ending. They would film stuff and then watch it and then see what worked and continue on. And apparently they had alternate end scenarios for most of these setups, 10 to 12 for each scene, ways things could go, which is a really interesting way to approach this movie.
How did they narrow it down?
They saw what was more effective. There's something about having a chance to view these and change it. If you look at the movie The Pyramid that I saw a couple weeks ago, which actually had a lot of writers, but I know that they wanted a specific ending because it was very obvious that they were ramping up to a certain event. And if you go into a film with no set real ending or idea, this is what you get. You get something that feels completely unique. You know?
And the ending is absolutely shocking. My jaw hit the ground.
It wasn't quite a knighting, but it was close.
Well, it's layers of endings too.
Right.
It wasn't just one instance.
And it was very meta.
In this genre, you don't see a lot of that. You don't see people pushing the limits of what they can do with single camera films like this.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for that approach and making it work at a level that no amount of additional money that you threw at this movie could have added anything to it.
I've got a quote from Mark Duplass here about his character Joseph. He says, "We were interested in the psychological profile of this very, very strange person. We were very interested in how you meet people and don't quite understand what's up, but you start to get signs. For us, that was intense eye contact, lack of personal space, oversharing, maybe a bit too much love here and there. But for me, there's something wrong with both of these guys, deeply."
Interesting. Yeah.
And you do see a bit of desperation in Aaron's character.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the reasons that Joseph is able to appeal to him so fully is because Aaron has some degree of that same loneliness. So he relates to it and pities it because he understands it.
He's a struggling cinematographer, or having something to do with the film industry in LA.
And right. And he's clearly single. And
that can be very isolating to struggle like that.
And it seems like the camera is really the only significant relationship he has in his life, because, you know, after the day that the $1,000 job that he was hired to do for Joseph, he still films everything. He films the trip out to the house at the beginning. He never stops filming. So yeah, there's probably something not right with him at some level.
Yeah, it was a surprisingly intense character study in terms of actually having relatable characters, even the creep himself.
And it was a surprisingly long road to get to this point, guys. I saw this at South by Southwest 2014, and it was immediately picked up after that by Radius TWC. Great Tom Quinn. The great
brought us It Follows.
It was slated for a VOD release in October of that year and was eventually dropped completely by Radius TWC.
Interesting.
They got to be kicking themselves.
But as Netflix always does, they saved the day. And now it's available as part of this Mark Duplass deal that Mark and Jay, the Duplass brothers, my favorite people on the entire planet, they have a 4-picture deal with Netflix. So I imagine that we're going to see a lot of these films be released this way, you know, direct to Netflix, which is kind of a step in the right direction of instant streaming.
I agree. I truly hope that they're finding a way to make it really profitable for the people making these movies, because
they deserve it.
Yeah, they really do. They're much more innovative than a lot of the things that hit the big blockbuster cinemas, and I hope they're getting what they deserve.
I don't care about them. I just want them to make more money so they can make us more movies like this.
I care about them. I care about all of them. I cared about Creep.
Of course, I hope that they're making bazillions of dollars.
Okay, do we want to say what we gave the movie?
I want to say one thing
one
real
more
quick.
Thing, sorry.
Sam and I saw a movie at the Stanley Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot of similar vibes about this. A movie called The Invitation that won't be out for a while, but I just want it to be on everyone's radar. Karin Kusama directed it. We have an interview with her up on frightday.com.
Just the same awkward situation where you just cannot figure out why the fuck someone doesn't just leave.
It's a great theme. And this was a great movie, which I would give a 7.8. I fucking love this movie.
Wow.
It was so unsettling and so weird, very consistent in those elements. And I really appreciate that. Appropriate use of single camera. And it's honestly the most refreshing original concept that I've seen in a very long time. I love this movie. Makes me even more afraid of Craigslist.
Just stay off it, Byron.
It's so icky.
Stay off of it.
Yuck.
I'm going to give it a 7.0. I like this movie a lot. It avoided all of the things that I hate about found footage and introduced some of the things that I do like about larger budget horror. Excellent cinematography, absolutely spotless script writing, or, you know, probably ad lib, I would think. This movie was tight, it was tense, and I really cannot wait to see more from Patrick Bryce and Mark Duplass.
I give it a 7.5. I really, really, really liked it as well. It was missing ghosts or aliens or Sasquatch, but
it could have been there in the back.
Could have been. But it's one of the creepier movies I've seen that is in you guys' choice subgenre of
real horror,
scary things.
Right. I loved it. And I am with you, Sam. I can't wait to see the next ones, next installments.
Absolutely. Next installments. Good news. If you loved this movie as much as we do, you're in luck. 2 sequels are in the works and one is possibly already done. Blumhouse signed something with Mark Duplass about getting these up and going. So
yay!
We haven't seen the last of The Creep.
Which is very, very exciting.
Yeah, we're led to believe he has a really interesting backstory. So I hope we get to hear something more about that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be prequel. It could be sequel. Lots of directions that this could go.
I really hope it's not a prequel. I
would totally dig a prequel.
Well, now I hope it's a prequel just to make you sad.
Oh, man.
Oh.
I'm almost sad.
Don't be sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next week, we are going to be reviewing. I haven't discussed this with any of you.
Uh-oh.
But we got a screener for a movie called Felt.
Woohoo!
No! Byron.
Which is having its world premiere this weekend. So I think we're going to be pretty much nailing it right on the head there.
Very exciting.
That is so exciting. That movie looks utterly disturbing.
Oh, so disturbing.
Very feminist.
It's gonna be...
Violently feminist.
It's going to be a...
We like violence and feminists.
Well, good.
This is the follow-up to Jason Banker's Toad Road, if you've seen that. I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it's a pretty interesting indie horror that I recommend everyone check out before we review his next movie, Felt. Kelly, I have to say, I'm pretty excited for next week's edition.
Yeah?
Of Curse.
I'm excited too.
I don't know if I trust these farmers, but I'm at least going to have open ears about it.
Well, you should. And like I said, the upcoming billionaire who plays into part two, you got to trust. Who doesn't trust billionaires?
Especially billionaires with goals of space conquest.
Hey, don't spoil it.
Kelly?
Yes?
Where can we find you on the internet? And where would you like people to send those ghost stories you were talking about earlier?
Please send ghost stories to kelly@frightday.com. You can also find me on Twitter @KellyFrightDay. And if you want to send me links to stories that way, I suppose you could do that. Really, any communication from any of you is wonderful. I love hearing from you guys. You're all great.
Sam, do you like hearing from people? And where would you like people to present things for you to hear?
A, yes. And B, on Twitter @SamFrightDay and email sam@frightday.com.
And I'm @ByronMcCoy on Twitter. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. I like things as well.
We can agree on that.
Thanks. Just send me.
Nice.
I don't know.
Nice.
Pieces of yourselves.
Don't send pieces of yourselves.
Through email.
Yeah, mail. Regular mail would be great. Oh, I gotta go watch some YouTube videos.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm scared.
Until next Friday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Stay online.